Hi, in this episode of IB Matters, we talked to Novadine Miller. You may remember her from an episode in Season 2, but she's now changed schools and is here to talk about the Connected Classroom. I'm so impressed by how Novadine, who has a PhD in physical geography and is an active researcher in her professional field, brings the world into her classroom and the students into the world. She does this through authentic interdisciplinary skill building and a focus on transfer skills. She has many examples of collaborations among colleagues, with parents, and with experts in various fields. All the while, her goal is to help students build their own knowledge given a rich set of personal experiences. Welcome to IB Matters, a podcast for those who currently teach, lead, attend, or are interested in International Baccalaureate IB schools. Hi, folks. Welcome back to IB Matters. And we're here with a returning guest, Novadine Miller. And she has moved since the last time you heard from her. If you want to go back and find out more about the work she was doing in an MYP school, we talked about individuals and societies. And that was actually Season 2, Episode 18. So you can go back to one of those earlier episodes and hear from her. But what I really respect about Novadine and a lot of things about her, but she's a practicing professional geographer with a love for teaching and sharing her knowledge with children. And she's been doing it in a middle school prior to this, and now she has moved to a high school. And we reconnected, and we're going to talk a little bit more about how IB is effectively a way of developing young people at an even older age and in different ways as she's experiencing in a new school. So welcome back to the podcast, Novadine, and why don't you catch people up with where you're at and what you're doing?
Thank you so much, Sean. Okay, so last time I was in the south of France, and now I'm in a school that's in Switzerland, in Geneva, in particular the Institut International Lancy. A wonderful region, an IB school where we do IB, we do IGCSE, and I'm teaching IB geography and IGCSE geography. And a wonderful school. We have about 145 students in IB, which actually started with 50 students and is now 145. So it's incredible to see how. Yeah, so that's where I'm at. And as you said, yes, I did a PhD in sustainable development and water policy. So I do enjoy being in the classroom. My research was in the forest, in the Caribbean country in an area of Jamaica. And I enjoy integrating that in teaching geography, in IB geography program and IGCSE, which is very relevant to my research.
Well, yeah, and that again kind of goes back to what I was saying, that it's unusual, I think, in my experience, to have a teacher who's got a professional degree in the subject area and that's actually in the field or been working in the field many times, depending on what the credentials are required. A teacher might have a chemistry degree and teach chemistry.
Yeah.
And in your case, you have a PhD in geography and you bring that directly into the classroom. And I really appreciate that you do that.
Yeah, I appreciate being here too. And it's also interesting because, I mean, even recently, you know, the world we live in now where students can research stuff and they're like, Miss, you wrote a book. I said, I did do a chapter in a book. Uh-huh. So you read it all the stuff online. So it's interesting to be able to share your research. And one thing I must say too, and I really encourage your listeners to do, is get persons involved, because we're more than happy to come in the classroom, even as guests. And I will talk about that later in terms of how I've integrated, you know, practitioners in the classroom. As one of the things that I must say I discovered much more during the time of COVID, to be honest, and just, you know, being in this time of platform. But there are lots of practitioners who are more than willing and enjoy coming into the classroom and just making it practical and real and seeing that what we're learning in books is actually happening and how they can be a part of it. And I will give an example of that later on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, that's the thing. I think a lot of teachers do make an attempt to bring in professionals. I think your case is so unusual because you are the professional in many cases, you know, that they don't,
Thank
they have
you.
To bring in. You've got it right there. And I think that's really, really wonderful. So let's, when we talked about this, this episode today, or prior to this, we were looking at a few different things that you wanted to talk about. And, you know, one of those that you've wanted to just share again is when you're in your experience, and now both MYP and the DP, both, what are some of the common or key skills that you see your kids developing, and how is the IB program? And I know you do this in the IGCSE as well. But what are you seeing developed in young people now that you've had that experience, you know, from middle school through high school?
I definitely see critical thinking skills developing. We talk about ATL, which is so important in IB, whether it's MYP or IGC or DP. But the critical thinking skills, you know, in one of the beauties of the IB or interactive active learning approach is we talk so much about critical thinking and deep learning. Mm-hmm. And in particular, there's a work by Dr. Reinhardt, who from Harvard, mm-hmm. and he did some really good work in terms of thinking routines and critical thinking and thinking pathway routines, you know, see things, share, 3-to-1 bridge. And just to see the critical thinking for me has been both engaging, challenging, and refreshing. Mm-hmm. Just to see how now with IB you're required to provide solutions. You're like, recently, just this week, I was doing something in HL with paper 3, and we were looking at stakeholders, and I was thinking, yes, look at stakeholders at what level. You have stakeholders for the government, you have stakeholders for international governance, thinking about providing solutions, thinking about the how, the why, and the effect of it all.
Yeah.
And I think it's just really refreshing to see that, as I was even saying to them last week, that this is a generation where we're in a time where you are not just going along a path, but you're creating a path and owning that path and seeing where it can go. And I think the time that we live in today is not just about following what everybody's doing,
right,
but also having something to know the why, the how, and what's happening in the future. So, I mean, even if we take IB geography, when we look at the format of paper 1, paper 2, looking at, you know, population and solutions, and to see them think, okay, people, what does people involve? What does, so in terms of quantitative and qualitative research skills, in terms of like collaboration skills, in terms of even effective learning, you know, being sensitive to the environment they are, who is in the environment, being in an international community, and how we manage that, organizing themselves. So I think the classroom we live in today is a living laboratory,
yeah,
that we have a chance to help them navigate. And there are specific examples. I don't know if you want me to go into that now or to wait.
No. Well, let me just kind of jump on to one of the points that you're making there. I think that one of the changes, biggest changes in education, is I remember for myself that I felt like my job as a student was to learn what they wanted me to learn, as opposed to kind of create,
yeah,
or, you know, gather the information and get the skill set necessary to,
yeah,
create something new. I mean, I honestly, and this maybe, I don't know if I'll leave this in the podcast, but I think one of the things I remember being having a college teacher, I had an oral exam or an individual, yeah, oral exam with a college professor, and I, you know, he said, well, there's nothing new here. And I was just like shocked, because, you know, here I was, you know, a 19-year-old college student, and the guy is thinking, mm-hmm, I'm supposed to come up with something new. I've never been asked for that, you know.
Yeah.
That wasn't the case. And I think one of the things I really love about the IB, and I think in general in education, that we're expected to kind of create new pathways through the information that's out there and through our background skills. And, you know, I don't know if you're following the controversies in some of our schools here in the U.S., but one of the controversies,
yes,
right now is trying to create a narrative to teach the children a specific narrative, as opposed to give,
yeah,
them experiences from which they create their own understanding. And I think that's a real big difference in what should be modern education, and certainly what IB does.
I agree with you 100%. You know, allowing them to think, allowing them to see things from different perspective, and even myself taking a step back and to understand where they're going in their thoughts and how it can evolve into something else. I can give an example just last week, actually. This week, we were doing an activity linked to International Women's Day. Mm-hmm. And I had a guest, Dr. Somerville, who is a medical anthropologist. And I invited her to look at, you know, the relationship between gender and the Sustainable Development Goals. And yeah. She gave the definition of gender. She gave the definition of, and she said, it will take 248 years to reach equality. And it went into a conversation with equity and equality. And the students gave their view, you know, of what that's linked with. And then, so this week, actually, after the conference, which we had before, they were asking about the definition and giving their idea. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting. I wasn't looking at it like that. So, you know, just to see how we define different views, how we allow them to come with their idea of solutions, how we think even, we often talk about top down and bottom up and their idea of what bottom up involves, which civil society groups are involved. It's quite enriching, I think. Mm-hmm. So I really think it's a pity when we approach the classroom as if students are a whiteboard that we just write on, when in fact we can learn a lot from them. And allowing them the place to do that and the space to do that, even in terms of images. I remember recently I did an activity linked to World Children's Day. And I said, okay, before even I would give them more stuff of how the day would go. I did that last year. And I said, okay, this is what we're going to do. And the ideas that they came up with, I mean, they taught me, for example, in a conference we would do that we could create a question and answer on a board and someone would come up with codes and put it up there. And our conference had a whole new dynamism because of that. So I really do agree with you that allowing students to have that idea of their inputs, whether it's writing an essay, whether it's defining the theory, whether it's having their critical thinking, and just giving them guidance of what that is a whole new experience in the classroom. I mean, even my research, I presented my research. Actually, they asked me, I was in a class, and they missed, are we going to hear about your work with water? Because, you know, I was like, yes, I'm coming to that. And even when they asked me some questions on the pictures, on what we discovered, and why did I do X or why did I do Z, actually, I had to go back and read mm-hmm. some of the parts that I wrote and come back and say, okay, you know, that was a good idea. And that's something I could look at the next time I'm in the forest. Yeah. So I can give an example if you want.
Please do. It'd be a good time for that.
So for instance, in my research in water quality, there's actually a river. I wanted to test what was happening after I defended my thesis. So one of the questions that University of Cambridge, the juror was asking was in terms of the price of water. And so I said, you know, that's something I should go back when I was in the field and check. So Dr. Rapley from University of Cambridge asked about that. So I decided to go back in the field after I submitted. And I discovered that in the region where I studied in the Kapi country, there's actually a new activity that was created by local persons going into the river and pumping water and selling the water.
Wow.
So that's actually, a new business now. So now I was talking, you know, this is about, you know, how groups can get involved. And they're like, but Miss, that what happened to the fish and all of that now? Is that really sustainable, Miss?
Yeah.
And they went in the whole list of like 5 questions. I was like, you know, that's a very good question. And that's something where, and they're like, Miss, what about the payments? You know, how does that work? And my one picture of this person taking water out of the river. And then I saw the picture after, and I saw, hey, I was walking 5 minutes and I saw this fisherman, he had lobster here. And the questions that came out of that, I said, you know what? You guys have given me more questions for me to go back in the forest and discover.
Yeah.
So it just shows that there's so much we can get from an exchange.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's this is kind of an aside, but I've seen a number of really good prompts that are just photographs. You know, just a photograph. Yeah. You know, speaking of land use and water, there's a great. I'm sure there's lots of these, but there's a great picture of a circular irrigation It's an aerial photograph of a region, an agricultural region with circular agricultural, whatever you call them, pods, wherever, you know, there's a center center well, and then they have the circular irrigation system going around it. And I just look at that picture, and you just ask the students to ask questions. What do you think? What do you want? What do you wonder about? And that's that, like you mentioned, that Dr. Richard, Dr. Ron Richard, who we've had here in Minnesota to speak to our group. His, you know, that's one of his things is, you know, what do you, you know, what do you wonder about? What do you think about? What do you wanna, what do you want to know next? You know, what would you do with this information? So, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, kids are great. You know, if you get them, give them a chance to inquire, they will find things you didn't think of for sure. Did you have any other examples you wanted to share, or do you want to talk more about kind of the skill building that you do in the classroom?
So as we talk also about the critical thinking skills in terms of research, because, you know, in IB, IGCSE, we have to develop the quantitative and qualitative skills. And we definitely, I think being in IB schools, IGCSE schools, I see it all the time, they should be able to handle both secondary data and primary data. So I've been, I think it's really important for students to understand the value of primary data, of going into the field. And it doesn't have to be geography alone, you know, in terms of just collecting information from a source, whether it's in with an ethnology, whether it's with sociology, but I mean, breaking it down at their level to understand the value of primary research and analyzing that. We have their IAs, which is a big part of IB. So that has been, I actually enjoy that part, you know, where they had to do their IAs. And just in terms of understanding the value of primary research, just this week, actually just yesterday, I had a conversation with one of my extended essay students who, for instance, want to do something in the field with checking water quality. And he was like, Miss Hall, we're about to go there. So I was like, I explained, for example, what I do in my work. And I was saying you could do an environmental impact assessment. And I said, look, do some research on what is being done in the field to collect data. And when we talk about integrating interdisciplinary learning, I spoke to one of the chemistry teachers, and he was able to give him a kit. The chemistry teacher, he's doing chemistry, was able to give a kit for him to understand, to go into the field where he wants to do his work, collect his own primary research, and to see what's happening with the quality of water and test that. We have also in terms of questionnaires, in terms of surveys, in terms of, and it's not just geography. It can be in English, you know, to understand maybe something with speech, with language. But primary data, I think the value of that, you know, especially when we do have the positive side of technology, but I think that's something we're losing a little bit, the value of collecting data and information yourself, the value of, you know, reading the newspaper and understanding perspective and views. One of the things I love to do, for example, is to ask them to read something from their language of origin in their local newspaper and to see the different views on it. So the quantitative and qualitative skills, the ATL skills linked to that in terms of communication, collaboration, organization, I think is really a lot that we can develop today in so many ways in the classroom, whether it's the extended essay, whether it's the IAs, whether it's in writing, you know, even in terms of collaboration, peer workshop learning. Just, you know, having an idea, discussing it with the other person, you know, 3-2-1 bridge, see things, share. I really think it's an enriching experience of what they can learn from.
Yeah. So one of the things about data collection that I found, and I was a chemistry teacher and a physics teacher, and one of the cool things about collecting your own data is that you really start to understand the sources of error. And it gives you a sense of, you know, okay, you understand why do we have this kind of error range? Why is there a plus minus on this data point? And it has to do with the instrument. It has to do with the quality of the sample. It has to do with where you collected it. It has to do with your own skill. And I think it also, it's kind of funny, but it kind of, it's a weird crossover between understanding. So when you get primary data from somewhere else, or if, you know, if you're looking at secondary data, you yeah. tend to take it at its value. You know, it's like, okay, well, those yes. numbers are hard numbers.
Exactly.
And you realize when you're collecting it that none of the numbers you give are that precise. And so
yes.
that goes back, I think, this is maybe a weird leap that I'm making, but I think it also goes back to news and vetting news resources and, you know,
so-called
fake funny. News. You understand yeah. that what's on the page, whether it's a number or a word, is based on someone's experience and has a relative amount of accuracy to it. And you have to kind of study that and go back through and go, okay, where did this number come from? Can I count on this number?
Yeah.
To what level can I count on it?
That is so true. And even what was happening at that time, maybe yeah. at that time, what important, what was the lens of analysis then is not the same lens of analysis now. So I think it's really important for them to understand that, the newspaper, the perspective of the journalists, mm-hmm. Even the use of words. That's why I think it's so important to look at interdisciplinary learning. The use of words, the context of words, the origin of words. And I can give another example, right?
Yes.
This year we did a project with the English department, which I mm-hmm. was so happy to see, especially coming to a new school. And I did a project with a teacher whereby they were studying a book in English. And mm-hmm. I don't know, we're just having a conversation in the staff room.
Yeah.
And I was saying to her, you know, that place has an important role. And she was like, what do you mean, Obudin? I said, yes, there's a theory by Paul Claval that talks about the social construction of space. So even space, when you see a name, a location in the book, it has relevance because there's a social construction to it.
Yeah.
And so we did an interdisciplinary unit together with year nines, where the place they studied in literature, they created a map. And I was amazed at the maps that came out of this project. We had a student who did something with contours going up in different layers.
Yeah.
We had students, for example, who did something with different textures of fabric
yeah.
to represent the different locations on the map. We had some who painted stuff. And afterwards, the English teacher was like, wow, Nobodin, now I understand better the sense of, and I understand a little bit more in English. And she understood a little bit more in geography. So even that for them, and we even did an activity where she came to my class as well. And I was able to explain even how I do that in my research. Because in my research, I look at, for example, how water is represented in Jamaica in poems. And in different lyrics, in different songs. And we don't realize how much, even in our own areas, we take a little from each other. So that was interesting for me to see how we can use these different skills. In terms of communication skills, one of the things I really appreciated since COVID, as I said, is the opportunity to connect with experts. So I did... a challenge that UNICEF does in collaboration with World Children Day. And the theme is inclusion for every child.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a challenge where you can go blue, you can wear blue. And also there's a challenge where you can actually reimagine a better future for every child. That's the theme.
Right.
So in terms of communication, they had to just draw an image of the world they imagine. And they created posters. And I was amazed of what this led to, you know, creating their idea. And one of the focuses they focused on was goal number 17 and goal number 23. One is children with disability. That's goal number 23. And one was goal number 17, which is access to information.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this actually led to two things. One, based on the current questions they had, I actually invited someone from the International Telecommunication Union of the UN. And they came in and, wow, it was amazing. They did a conference. The students were the ones who did the welcome, did the thank you, who engaged in questions of what they wanted to know about. And actually now we're considering doing a project with them in terms of a committee that they have and the school and even my IT director to manage in terms of how that will work. But even that, there are projects by the UN, by different communities that they can engage in a very practical way at their age in a safe, you know, environment. And it was, for me, that was just awesome. It also led to a group of students who wanted to do a cake sale. So another teacher, by virtue of being sensitive to this, and we raised, I think it was over 600 francs in 2 hours.
Wow.
For, yeah, and that was something that another teacher got involved, and in our class, other students got involved. They came, they baked their stuff, and we sold it. So, you know, there are other practical stuff. So collaboration, that's collaboration skills, that's organization skills, that's effective skills to being sensitive to what's happening with different children across the world. In our program, in geography, we study migration. And another thing we focused was human trafficking. That's a reality. And that was one of the focus also on their poster that they came up with, that they wanted to focus on. So we also had somebody from the UNHCR who spoke about, you know, human trafficking and what's happening in different parts of the world. And again, that's another issue that we can discuss and talk about. So again, we have communication skills. We have the critical thinking skills, all getting involved in a live classroom.
Right. In fact, a lot of what you were just describing, that was in that article that ended up in the IB journal.
Oh, okay.
Is that right? I think, and you've got a... for listeners, you can check the links in the podcast notes. We'll have several links related to Novadine's work and some of her past published articles. So maybe even that book that you were...
Yeah, thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
Yes, there are two on the IB website. One has to do with, you know, community projects and how you can link with your community. And there's another one in terms of individuals and societies and just having practical ways of engaging students in the classroom in geography. And I also have some articles on the ISN network, and I do encourage teachers to publish. It's really interesting to see, to share your tools, your approach in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And you also learn to see what it is other individuals are interested in. So I do encourage, I would definitely encourage your listeners to get involved in publishing as well, and to read some of these articles if they want to know more. I've spoken about, for instance, ATL skills and, you know, just the way we can help in raising their voice if they're interested in that. And also, if they're interested in research, for instance, Dr. Bruce Perdue, he did a book. I have a chapter in his book where he talks about just focusing forests, and we do different chapters in different parts of the world to see how we can look at forests from a new perspective. So, yes. Yeah, and you have someone who came on recently as well. And he did a whole series on ATLs, which was really good.
Right,
so there's so much, you know, tools out there, you know, to enrich. And students listen too, because I've had students who've listened.
Oh, okay,
and,
that's,
you know,
good.
Yes. They do that's listen good. Too. Yeah.
Yeah, you probably make sure they listen to season 2, episode 18 and hear all about their teacher's work. I was noticing in our notes that you talked about, I'm kind of intrigued by this. You mentioned students using drones for some of their research.
Oh, yes. Thanks for reminding me of that. So yes, I think it's really important to have vertical learning. I think many teachers can say that, you know, when you reach DP, it's good to build the skills also at a lower level.
Yeah.
So one of the activities I like to do is, am I going too fast?
No, not at all. But I think it's okay. kind of funny. We're talking about vertical learning and drones in the same comment.
Yeah, same conversation. Okay. Yes. So in vertical learning, it's important that student build skills from lower school and go up to upper school, which is a huge issue, I can say, in DP.
Yeah.
So one of the things I try to encourage is, whether it's NYP or IGCSE, for them to build their primary research skills. And one way I do that is by an environmental impact assessment.
Yeah.
And so I gave a group of students a task to do, to just go in their communities, and they had a guide of what they were looking for the environmental impact assessment. And a group of students decided to do this with drones, which I think is a beautiful idea.
Yeah.
So they went out and they used their drones to map the area and, you know, capture the area. And then they were able to come in the classroom and present that. And we were able to discover, for example, in that area, they were doing a project towards a sustainable hotel. We were able to have images of the area in its global sense.
Right.
So, and that was at lower schools. So the generation that we're teaching today, they can use their drone. And, and when you're going to do maps, If you're going to do something on maps, we talk about topographic maps and geography to catch the physical landscape. Why not?
Yeah.
So I was able to discover that. And that was their proposition, because I was like, guys, take your cameras out, because I showed them in my research. That's one of the beauties of being a practitioner. So in my research, I well, of course, when you're doing research with PhD studies, you have to collect the data yourself. So, and they see me with my big camera and they're like, Miss, that's yours? I said, yes, that's mine. So I showed them pictures of me in the forest in terms of, you know, I study karst landscapes where you have limestone rock.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. You know, you can be walking in the forest in the spring and you can capture the whole story behind that GIS system, all of that. And I was able to show them my own maps from my work. So they're like, okay, Miss, so we can go with our jobs. I was like, sure, of course. As long as they respect the laws and the rules of it. Wonderful. And so they did. They went out and they used the drones and they captured different images. And then they came back and they presented it in the class. And I think that's something that we should definitely get involved in, whether it's in, it could be something even at schools to see the different heights, you know, the different views of the earth, of the space. You get to see things that you can't just see on the map. You have it right there, modern data, which sometimes even the maps haven't caught up with yet. So yes, I do believe that with vertical learning, to teach the skills at a younger age in a very visual, graphic way.
Yeah.
And so drones can be used to be to do that now. You can use the cameras. Even now with the phones, they have a GPS tracker on it.
Yeah.
So even when you go on a hike, you can use the GPS tracker and track where you are. And then after, you can see the valley, you can see the interlocking spurs, you know, you can see the geography on in images.
Yeah.
And that permits vertical learning, because when they go into IGCSE and they start studying maps and you have to understand the legend and the scale and the contours, and then they go into DP and you have to do your IAs and you have to take these things yourself. They already have a certain knack for it, I guess we can say.
Yeah, as you're describing, you know, all the different aspects of geography and teaching geography in a high school classroom, you realize how interdisciplinary it is and how it connects with it so many different things in the subject. And, you know, I was just thinking, as you're talking about the students investigating their area, I mean, where you're located right now is so beautiful in one respect. And it's they've got terrain to no end. And so it's not only can you have beautiful visuals, but they can, you know, relatively easily get to different altitudes and find themselves, you know, I was thinking about you know, the connection to the human physiology as we try to breathe at higher levels. Well, I would guess that you must be 1,000 meters, aren't you? Probably at least.
Yeah. About that. Yeah.
Which is enough for, I'm sitting here at about 300 meters where I am. So, and it's flat. I'm looking out. We're kind of a flat area where we are.
Yeah, it's pretty high. Yeah, it is.
You talked about quite a few of the things in our notes. Is there anything that you wanted to make sure we include else that we included?
We spoke about transfer skills.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So I did critical thinking, affective skills, organization skills, collaboration skills, communication. But I just want to emphasize too that I think it's really important for us to understand the value of the transfer skills that our different disciplines can give. So not just in geography, whether it's in chemistry, we've spoken so many times and see how our different areas collaborate. Yeah. And but I think it's so important for them to understand the skills that they can transfer from one area to another. And just in terms of how they approach life outside the classroom. So for instance, recently we had the author of the book that we use as a guest, Dr. Stephen Codrington. And I remember he was I asked him to talk about his fieldwork and the use of his fieldwork and how he used that in writing his book. Mm-hmm. And just to see how, even as geographers or as chemists or as biologists, there are skills we can transfer to the students outside of the traditional box that they can use outside the classroom and inside the classroom, and, you know, at university level. So we spoke about my background. One of the things I used to do too was to lecture at university. Mm-hmm. And I could see the difference of how some students would be lost per se when they come into the university world, or even if it's going to an interview, or if it's going on an internship, or if it's just the way to navigate a family, you know, new dynamics. So I think one of the things I would love to emphasize is to understand the privilege and also the opportunity we have to develop and to encourage those transfer skills. It really does add, I would say, a breath of fresh air in the classroom when we allow it. So for instance, this week I had a student coming to me to ask about reading an English essay. And in my head, I'm like, that's not my area. Yeah. I'm like, miss, but we spoke about X, Y, Z. I was like, okay, but bear in mind, you know, that's not my forte.
Yeah.
But I just think that it's important. And I think it's a challenge to myself, too, that it's important, like, being able to talk to you here as a teacher in this podcast, communication skills. But our classroom is not just what they're only going to write on their essay, but how they can transfer those skills later to university. Because I have my university colleagues who are also talking about that, is that when it comes to university, being able to learn how to study, you know, just being able to put their ideas, keeping a engaged conversation, or just being alert to the fact that you, or for instance, you have internships out there in their field. But I think it's really important to understand, I mean, even the interviews today for university interviews, you need to be able to talk about your social research.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my last point, if I could say per se, is just to understand, you know, our transfer skills. I was listening to a study recently where a geographer, for instance, was looking at how you study space. They're looking at how to define the space of different areas of the school. But I just think it's important to the transfer skills as well of inside the classroom, outside the classroom, and how that involves in their day-to-day life.
Yeah, I mean, a case can be made that without transfer and the ability to transfer, you haven't really learned. You haven't really, you haven't internalized it, because that's in fact how we demonstrate the learning, is that we can put it back out there in the world. Yeah. Any final thoughts? I think we've kind of covered most of what we were looking at. Anything else you'd like to talk about, Novadine?
I think really, I didn't speak a lot about the affective skills, but one of the things I really come to appreciate too, I saw this when I was having a conversation with my year 12s, is, as I said, I did that activity for World Children's Day, and the theme was, there was a song theme that says, I felt included. When, from the perspective of a geographer, you know, you tend to think about this in terms of feeling included in terms of geography and physical aspects of it. But I just left the floor open and I said to them, I'd like each person to say, you know, what are some areas that you like to see how you feel included? Mm-hmm. And I just found it refreshing to see how we can engage in conversations that extend beyond the classroom. And so I extended that activity to ask the parents to get involved. So my last point is, the classroom is not only yourself and the students. Your classroom is also yourself, the community, and the parents who are there with them every day. And I was really amazed to see how, for instance, for this activity for International Women's Day, one of the questions I asked them, because there's an international theme by the UN, and there's a theme that says, well, there's a question that says, what would you ask your younger self? So I asked them to ask the question linked to the international theme and the question linked to this question, what would you ask your younger self? And I was also amazed that the parents got involved. And just to see the thoughts that we could have from different parts of the world. So if it's a final thought, I would say, and it's something I'm also challenging myself to do, is to engage the parents in your classroom. You know, oftentimes we look at the parents as, okay, they're there for the homework. And, you know, when we have the parents-teachers meeting. But I would also like to say, maybe reflect on the way we are engaging with our parents as well. For this activity that I did for International Women's Day, the guest who came is also a parent who is there in our community. So I think we also have leaders or practitioners per se in our community. And the way we engage with parents can also add a refreshing exchange in our classroom. And that's something I've experienced in the last 2 weeks, where I just invited them to participate just in terms of writing or exchanging with their ideas, and had a fresh view on this. I was able to discover, you know, even in terms of the perspectives of women in different parts of the world, on how, you know, what was happening, different generations of, you know, the idea of being a doctor or a lawyer, etc. So my final thought, to keep it short, is also to just reflect on the classroom not being four walls. Again, yeah, we do have our exams that they need to pass. We do have the essays that they need to write. And I think it's such a beautiful thing when we can welcome other windows, if we can say, to how we look on the world and how we're shaping their view of the world. Because let's face it, the world that they're living in today, you don't survive if you don't have that unique part of yourself. So I think it's important to reflect on how we navigate that and how we allow them to navigate.
That's beautiful. Very well stated, and a great final thought. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks. So it was wonderful to have you back on again, Novadine, and I hope that that you continue to have success.
Yes, well, it was my pleasure to be here as usual. It's always a pleasure.
So thank you for being with us, and I hope we can have you on again. I don't know. I don't wish you to have to change schools or to change schools again.
Yes. But
anytime you have a good idea, please get a hold of me, and we'll get it out to the world. So I appreciate that. So thanks again.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Be sure to check out the links in our podcast notes to find Novadine's articles that were published in the IB blog and several other helpful links she has provided. Now that we have over 100 IB Matters episodes covering a range of subjects, you can use our podcast webpage, which is organized by program and by topic. The link to the website is also in our podcast notes. Please find all our episodes wherever you get your podcasts, and then subscribe so you don't miss any future programs. Join our over 4,000 followers on Twitter at MattersIB. Also, help us spread the word about IB by liking, sharing, and reviewing the IB Matters links in your own feeds and social networks. In our time on the air, we've been heard in over 160 countries, a testament to the global reach of the IB.